Lecture 2, Classifying Conspiracies and Characterizing Believers. On Wednesday, May 16, 2012, I spent several hours on a hot bus in a neon desert called Las Vegas with a merry band of British conspiracists during their journey around the southwestern United States in search of UFOs, aliens, Area 51, and government cover-ups, all for a BBC documentary. One woman regaled me with a tale about orange balls of energy hovering around her car on the 405 freeway in Los Angeles, which, she said, were subsequently chased away by black ops helicopters. A man challenged me to explain the source of a green laser beam that followed him around a British countryside one evening. Conspiracy theories are a perennial favorite for television producers because there is always a receptive audience for a wide swath of cabals. A recent documentary I participated in called Conspiracy Rising, for example, featured conspiracy theories behind the deaths of JFK and Princess Diana, UFOs, Area 51, and 9/11, as if there was a common thread running through all of them. According to radio host and conspiracy monger Alex Jones, also featured in the film, there is. The military-industrial complex killed John F. Kennedy, Jones asserts. And he's equally confident that, quote, no matter how you look at 9/11, there was no Islamic terrorist connection. The hijackers were clearly U.S. government assets who were set up as patsies like Lee Harvey Oswald. Alex Jones has spun countless conspiracy theories like these on his site, Infowars.com, as well as on his many appearances on Joe Rogan's wildly popular podcast. To his credit, Rogan has had me on his podcast many times as well to present a skeptical perspective on these and other conspiracy theories, and he pointedly asks Jones for evidence for such claims, but to date, none has been provided. In the first lecture, I made the distinction between a conspiracy and a conspiracy theory. Recall that I define a conspiracy as two or more people plotting or acting in secret to gain an advantage or harm others immorally or illegally. And I define a conspiracy theory as a structured belief about a conspiracy, whether it is real or not. And finally, I define a conspiracy theorist or conspiracist as someone who holds a conspiracy theory about a possible conspiracy, again, whether or not it is real. In this lecture, I'd like to expand our discussion of conspiracies and conspiracy theories by looking closely at the many and varied types of conspiracy theories through various classification schemes that scholars of conspiracy theories have proposed, followed by an overview of studies on who is more or less likely to believe in conspiracy theories, what percentage of the population believes which conspiracy theories, and some of the factors that lead to belief or disbelief in conspiracy theories. Let's start with classifying conspiracy theories by type. Aliens. Under this category, you have conspiracy theories related to UFOs, alien abductions, Area 51, Roswell, and the moon landing hoax. Then there's the category of anti-Semitism, which includes such conspiracy theories as the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, the stab in the back, and Holocaust denial. And we could go on classifying this way. Aviation, black helicopters, chemtrails, TWA Flight 800, and Malaysia Airlines Flight MH370. Government, false flag operations, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, FEMA prison camp, Sandy Hook, the Philadelphia experiment, the Clintons, QAnon, and the deep state. Medicine, water fluoridation, vaccinations, secret cancer cures, the invention and spread of AIDS. Religion, Antichrist, Jesus married and had children, anti-Catholicism. Science and technology, weather and earthquake control, global warming, technology suppression, the flat earth. Suspicious deaths. Who really killed JFK, RFK, MLK, Jimmy Hoffa, and Princess Diana? And what about the suspicious deaths of Amelia Earhart, Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, Tupac Shakur, and the notorious B.I.G.? In his 2018 book, Conspiracies Declassified, the investigative journalist Brian Dunning has cataloged no less than 50 conspiracy theories, and even that's a restricted list, as he insists on two requirements to qualify. One, they must be specific enough to be falsifiable. Too often, proposed conspiracy theories are so uselessly vague that they're always going to be true, Dunning notes. And two, they must be known by the conspiracy theorists before being revealed by the media or law enforcement. Many times, conspiracy theorists will look back on historical conspiracies and claim they are examples of conspiracy theories proven true, Dunning observes, identifying the hindsight bias in conspiratorial thinking that we will explore in a coming lecture. Dunning's 50 conspiracies only partially overlap with the 1994 book, The 50 Greatest Conspiracies of All Time, by Jonathan Vankin and John Whalen, a title later updated as The 60 Greatest Conspiracies of All Time and The 80 Greatest Conspiracies of All Time. A quick Amazon search generates many such works. Here's just a small sampling. History's Greatest Conspiracies, 100 Plots, Real and Suspected, That Have Shocked, Fascinated, and Sometimes Changed the World. Conspiracy, History's Greatest Plots, Collusions, and Cover-Ups. The World's Greatest Alien Conspiracy Theories. The Mammoth Book of Cover-Ups, The 100 Most Terrifying Conspiracies of All Time. History Decoded, The 10 Greatest Conspiracies of All Time. QAnon, An Invitation to the Great Awakening. Conspiracy Theories and Secret Societies for Dummies. And another from my personal library that piqued my interest as a curious high schooler. None Dare Call It Conspiracy, which is described as, quote, a primer for anyone who wishes to understand the basic workings of the global network of insiders that is determined to wield power over all of mankind in the coming New World Order. And on it goes, depending on which keywords one uses to search. Then there are all the secret organizations said to be conspiring against us. For example, the Bilderberg Group, the Bohemian Club, the Council on Foreign Relations, the European Union, the Federal Reserve, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the International Monetary Fund, the Knights Templar, the New World Order, the Priory of Zion, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Trilateral Commission, Yale Skull and Bones, the Zionist Occupation Government, ZOG. To wrap our minds around all these conspiracy theories, researchers have tried cataloging them according to type. In his 2013 book, The United States of Paranoia, for example, journalist Jesse Walker has identified 5 types of conspiracy theories. There's the enemy outside, which refers to theories based on figures alleged to be scheming against a community from without. The enemy within finds the conspirators lurking inside the nation, indistinguishable from ordinary citizens. The enemy above involves powerful people manipulating events for their own gain. The enemy below features the lower classes working to overturn the social order. The benevolent conspiracies are angelic forces that work behind the scenes to improve the world and help people. Political scientist Michael Barkun has a different organizational scheme. In his 2003 book, A Culture of Conspiracy, he classifies conspiracy theories into 3 types. Event conspiracy theories, such as the JFK assassination, 9/11, Sandy Hook. Systemic conspiracy theories, such as those involving social control, political power, and even world domination. And super conspiracy theories, such as those involving a single individual or force that controls everything, from a politician to an alien force to Satan himself. And for these type of conspiracy theories, Barkun suggests a threefold model of why people believe them. First, conspiracy theories claim to explain what normal historical and political analysis cannot. They try to make sense of a world that is otherwise nonsensical. Second, they explain the world in a relatively simple way, almost Manichaean in dividing the world into good and evil, with conspirators representing the dark side of humanity. And third, conspiracy theories are a type of secret knowledge that is either unknown or underappreciated by others. The conspiracist is in on the secret, while the unwashed masses continue about their lives either brainwashed or simply ignorant of the Kabbalistic forces operating around them. Barkun's threefold model is illuminating. The simplicity of most conspiracy theories is what makes them appealing. It's hard to wrap our minds around the matrix of causal variables that contribute to the making of historical, political, and economic events. Indeed, social scientists have developed sophisticated statistical techniques and computer models to tease apart the many variables that shape any human behavior or social phenomenon. Conspiracy theories allow people to cut through all that complexity and to identify a clear villain. In his 2015 book, Suspicious Minds: Why We Believe Conspiracy Theories, psychologist Rob Brotherton makes much the same point. Quote, things seem a whole lot simpler in the world according to conspiracy theories. The prototypical conspiracy theory assumes nothing is as it seems. It portrays the conspirators as preternaturally competent and as unusually evil. To the classificatory schemes of Jesse Walker and Michael Barkun, I would add another distinction, that between paranoid conspiracy theories involving ultra-secret entities for which there is little to no evidence and are largely driven by paranoia, and realistic conspiracy theories involving normal political institutions and corporate entities conspiring to manipulate the system to gain an unfair, immoral, and sometimes illegal advantage over others. Paranoid conspiracy theories include aliens, evil forces, world domination schemes, or cabals so numerous and plots so complicated that they could never be pulled off. Examples include the Bilderbergers, the Rockefellers, or the Rothschilds running the world's economies, the Illuminati determining political elections and power relations, and even 9/11 is an inside job, which would have involved hundreds or even thousands of operatives working in perfect harmony and complete secrecy. Realistic conspiracy theories include government agencies and corporate entities engaged in power consolidation, personal profiteering, tax cheating schemes, regulation dodging activities, and any number of shenanigans that we see routinely on the nightly news. Watergate is an example from government. Volkswagen cheating emission regulations is an example from industry. Wells Fargo opening fake bank accounts is an example from business. And the usual insider trading and tax avoidance plots are examples from finance. These are true conspiracy theories. Realistic conspiracy theories often involve power or the lack of it. In his 1985 book, The Liberty Lobby and the American Right, the historian Frank Mintz popularized the term conspiracism to describe the beliefs of people without power who are prone to view history as being driven primarily by people with power. As he wrote, conspiracism serves the needs of diverse political and social groups in America and elsewhere. It identifies elites, blames them for economic and social catastrophes, and assumes that things will be better once popular action can remove them from positions of power. Power as a central element in the structure of conspiracy theories was affirmed by the two political scientists we met in Lecture 1, Joseph Yuzinski and Joseph Parent. Performing an analysis of over 100,000 letters sent to the New York Times over the course of 121 years, Yuzinski and Parent coded the content for conspiracy-related themes. Their analysis generated 3 pages worth of conspirators, from Adolf Hitler and the African National Congress to the World Health Organization and Zionist villagers, cataloged into 7 types: left, right, communist, capitalist, government, media, and other. This last type includes Freemasons and even scientists in the AMA. Letter writers in the 1890s, for example, were afraid that Mormons had rigged elections for Republicans and that Canada and England were conspiring to reclaim U.S. territory. In the early 1900s, correspondents were worried about the role of financial interests in undermining democracy, and so on throughout the 20th century, dispelling the myth that conspiracism is a recent phenomenon. The common theme running throughout these letters was power. People writing to the New York Times editors expressed their concern that someone or something was engaged in getting or using illegitimate power to manipulate others, which, as we shall see later in this course, is not always a false conspiracy theory. Other than letter writers themselves, do people really believe such conspiracy theories? They do, and in disturbingly high numbers, as measured by many polling agencies. Just listen to these statistics. About 1/3 of Americans believe the birther conspiracy theory that Obama is a foreigner. About as many believe that 9/11 was an inside job by the Bush administration. About 10% of Americans think that the chemtrail conspiracy theory is completely true, and another 30% think that is somewhat true, meaning that over 100 million Americans think that the government and airlines are conspiring to poison or drug U.S. citizens by spraying chemicals from airliners. 4% of people believe that shape-shifting reptiles are secretly running the world. 7% of people believe that the moon landings were faked. 9% believe that the government adds fluoride to water, not to fight tooth decay, which it does, but in order to control the lives of citizens. 21% believe that an alien spaceship crash-landed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, and that the government is hiding the ship and aliens in a secret warehouse, possibly in Area 51, and that we back-engineered computer technology from them. Since 1963, more than half of all Americans have believed that more than one person was responsible for the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, with a high of 81% in the 1970s and a low of 61% in the 2010s. Conspiracy theories are not restricted to America. A 2016 survey among British citizens found that 51% believe that despite being a democracy, a few people will always run things in this country anyway. 41% believe that the government is hiding the truth about how many immigrants really live in the country. 13% believe that, regardless of who is officially in charge, there is a single group of people who secretly control events and rule the world together. 9% believe that the idea of man-made global warming is a hoax that was invented to deceive people. 4% believe that the AIDS virus was created and spread around the world on purpose by a secret group or organization. And 2% believe that the official account of the Nazi Holocaust is a lie. In 2016, my colleagues at Chapman University, where I teach, conducted a study on what Americans fear the most. The research team, led by Christopher Batter, found that 54.3% of Americans believe that the government is concealing what they know about the 9/11 attacks, And it's not just 9/11. Here are some events and topics, along with the percentage of people who think the government is hiding what they know about each. The JFK assassination, 49.6%. Alien counters, 42.6%. Global warming, 42.1%. Plans for a one-world government, 32.9%. Obama's birth certificate, 30.2%. The origin of the AIDS virus, 30.2%. The death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, 27.8%. And 24.2% of Americans believe the government is concealing what it knows about the moon landing. Emblematic of just how strong conspiratorial thinking can be, once you put people into a conspiracy mindset, they will even believe in a made-up conspiracy. To wit, Batter and his colleagues threw into the mix the North Dakota crash. Remarkably, they found that a third of Americans think that the government is concealing information about this non-existent event. The Chapman researchers also measured the correlation between the number of conspiracies someone believes and their fear that the world will end in my lifetime. The results were revealing. 5.2% of those who believe no conspiracies believe that the world will end in their lifetime, compared to 6.4% for those who believe in 1 to 3 conspiracies, 14.4% for those who believe in 4 to 7 conspiracies, and 22.6%, almost 1 in 4, of those who believe in 8 to 10 conspiracies. The implications are clear. Believing in conspiracies makes one fearful. Batter and his colleagues also found a correlation between the number of conspiracy beliefs a person holds and that person's distrust of others. They assess this by 2 measures. 1, fear that their significant other is cheating, and 2, fear that others are talking about them. For those with no conspiracy beliefs, these 2 fears were held by 6.6% and 4.4%, respectively. For those who believe 1 to 3 conspiracies, the percentage of these fears were 7.4% and 6.6%. For those holding 4 to 7 conspiracy beliefs, the numbers were 11% and 6%. And those who believe in 8 to 10 conspiracies distrusted their spouses and others at 17.6% and 11.3%. Perhaps most disturbingly for real-world consequences, as evidenced in Lecture 1 with the mass public shooting in New Zealand, Batter and his colleagues found that the more conspiracies people believe in, the more likely they were to buy a gun. Specifically, 7.1% of people with no conspiracy beliefs bought a gun out of fear, compared to 10% holding 1 to 3 conspiracies, 15.7% for those holding 4 to 7 conspiracies, and 17.4% for those believing in 8 to 10 conspiracies. In studying the people most likely to believe in conspiracies, the Chapman researchers concluded that conspiracy theorists, quote, tend to be more pessimistic about the near future, more fearful of government, less trusting of other people in their lives, and more likely to engage in actions due to their fears, such as purchasing a gun. In part, this research helps explain the actions of extremist groups like the Aryan Nations and the Ku Klux Klan, and terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. People in these groups are more likely to embrace conspiracy theories out of fear and in predictable ways. The Aryan Nations and the KKK fear that Jews and other minorities are plotting to replace whites and/or destroy Western culture. The jihadists of Al-Qaeda and ISIS fear that the United States is conspiring to occupy the Middle East and destroy Islam. A conspiracy theory popularized by the intellectual founder of Al-Qaeda, Abdullah Azzam, in his book, The Defense of Muslim Territories. In fact, political extremism in general, of both the left and the right, is affiliated with conspiratorial cognition. Dutch psychologist Jan Willem van Pruyen reports on this connection in his 2018 book, The Psychology of Conspiracy Theories. According to Pruian, people on the political extremes reported feeling more uncertain about their economic future than moderates were, and, for instance, worried that there would be little pension for them when they were old, or that in the near future the Western world would be set back to a much lower level of prosperity. Distressingly for social harmony, compared to moderates, people on the growing political extremes are less tolerant of people from groups different from them. On the left, this includes bankers, millionaires, and soldiers. On the right, this includes Muslims, gays, and lesbians, and scientists. They are also more likely to agree with statements like this. Quote, people who think differently than me about political issues are of lesser value than I am. Extremism leads to conspiratorial cognition because, as von Pruian explains by way of example, if one has an aversion against social elites, it is a small step to assume that those elites are involved in hostile conspiracies. Studies on political extremism on both the left and the right, for example, socialists on the populist left and anti-immigrationists on the populist right, find that people at both extremes are more susceptible to believing conspiracy theories than are moderates. For example, in 2015, von Pruian and his colleagues conducted a study of nationally representative samples of the Dutch voting population about a range of conspiracy theories, with participants ranging politically from neutral to slanted toward either the political left or the right. The researchers concluded, participants who placed themselves at either the extreme left or the extreme right were, on average, more likely to believe conspiracy theories than participants who placed themselves in the political center. Other researchers have found similar rates of conspiratorial belief among extremists in Germany, showing how political preference predicts what the researchers called conspiracy mentality, as measured by the tendency to agree with such conspiratorial statements as, quote, there are secret organizations that have great influence on political decisions. Those most likely to agree with such statements came from both the German Radical Socialist Party and the German anti-immigration parties. Centrists scored lowest in conspiracy mentality. In 2016, von Pruian and his colleagues conducted a study in the U.S., comparable to the one they did in Holland, and found similar beliefs among extremists about the financial crisis. For example, people on the far left were more likely to believe that the Great Recession of 2009 was caused by a conspiracy of corrupt bankers and politicians, while people on the far right were more likely to believe that the financial meltdown was caused by a conspiracy of government agents. Given the fact that conspiracy theories were quite common in both far-left communist regimes and far-right fascist regimes throughout the 20th century, this makes sense. And of course, the targets of the conspiracy theories are always centered on people or groups perceived to be an enemy of the party in power. The suppression of civil rights, civil liberties, and the free press by totalitarian regimes is almost always tethered to a conspiracy theory about some threat that warrants a government crackdown. This has happened not only in European countries, such as fascist Italy, Nazi Germany, and Soviet Russia in the 1930s and 1940s, and throughout states controlled by the USSR during the Cold War, but in the United States as well. For example, during World War I, President Wilson and the United States Supreme Court threatened the liberties of German Americans, a pattern that repeated itself during World War II when President Roosevelt forced Japanese Americans into prison camps. And of course, there's the infamous example from the 1950s when Senator Joseph McCarthy blacklisted writers perceived to be communists. And lest we grow too complacent with how much the arc of the moral universe has bent toward justice in the last half century, recall what the Pentagon Papers revealed about what the U.S. government was doing in Vietnam without congressional approval, much less public awareness, and what WikiLeaks documents laid bare about how both the Bush and Obama administrations were spying on American citizens, and who knows what else. As we shall see in more detail in the second half of the course, there are in fact good reasons to be constructively distrustful about the goings-on of government. In her 2009 book, Real Enemies, Conspiracy Theories and American Democracy, World War I to 9/11, the historian Catherine S. Olmsted catalogs the many government-driven conspiracies and cabals of the 20th century. She writes, "The institutionalized secrecy of the modern U.S. government inspired a new type of conspiracy theories which proposed that the federal government itself was the conspirator." Olmsted outlines three good reasons why Americans are prone to believing in government conspiracies because of this history. 1. Genuine government overreach and secrecy during the Cold War, such as with Watergate, the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, and the MK-Ultra mind control project and the CIA collaboration with the Mafia to assassinate Fidel Castro. 2. Government-sanctioned propaganda in the form of misinformation, or what we would today call fake news, such as claims of German infiltration of the U.S. during World War II, or the now-discredited claim that Saddam Hussein helped orchestrate 9/11 and had weapons of mass destruction. 3. The distrust fostered by the government's spying and harassment of dissenters, such as the Sedition Act of 1918 and the numerous Red Scares in the 1950s and 1960s, most notably the McCarthy hearings. These are all excellent points, but at the same time, we can't just point an accusing finger at politicians and leave it at that. As we've already seen today, it's often our own tendency toward tribalism and fear that makes us susceptible to manipulation. As the August CBS reporter Edward R. Murrow said of Senator Joe McCarthy, "He didn't create the situation of fear. He merely exploited it. And rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves." In this lecture, we explored the many different types of conspiracy theories by considering several classification schemes proposed by scholars of conspiracy theories, as well as a few ideas of my own, which was followed by an overview of studies on the percentages of beliefs of these different conspiracy theories and who is more or less likely to believe in them. In the next lecture, we will dig into the mind of the conspiracist to better understand the psychology of conspiratorial belief.